It's Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Wisconsin doesn't have fossil fuel deposits, but sand produced in our state is vital for that industry. We look at the hot topic of fracking as it's become an issue in this election. First, voting in the presidential election and other down-ballot races comes to a close tomorrow. Hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites have already submitted their absentee ballots, and tomorrow people can go to the polls in person. They open at 7 in the morning and close at 8 o'clock in the evening. The head of the Wisconsin Elections Commission joins us now for a reminder on what we need to bring to cast our vote, how to register, and more. And if you have a question about the different ways to cast your vote or what you need to make it happen, give us a call now, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We've got a line for you there. Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Megan, thanks for being with us on this very busy day.
Well, of course. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for having me.
This election is different from what we're used to in some major ways, but it's worth getting a reminder about just the normal aspects of voting. One of those is voter ID. What do we need at the polls?
Thanks so much for that question, because you're right. You know, as folks head to the polls tomorrow, that's a really important one. All voters are required to show a photo ID at the polls when they're voting. So every voter that casts an in-person ballot at the polls has to show a photo ID. Now, that ID can be something like a Wisconsin ID or a Wisconsin driver license. It can be a U.S. passport, a military ID, a tribal ID, a student ID, or one of the others that are designated by law. That ID does not, if you're using a state of Wisconsin ID card or a driver license, it does not need to have the star in the upper right-hand corner that signifies it as a quote-unquote real ID for the DMV. So star or no star on your ID, you're good to go.
What if it's expired?
Yeah. If it's a Wisconsin ID card or state ID, it can be expired since the last general election. So it can be expired since November of 2018. It also doesn't have to have your current address on it, which I still find a lot of folks sometimes don't know. So when you're showing your photo ID, they're looking to see that your name conforms to the name on the poll book. They're looking to see that you reasonably resemble the photo. And they're looking to make sure that it's not expired or it's expired within those deadlines that is provided under law. But they're not looking for a current address. So if you don't have your current address printed on your ID, that's okay. That's still good for voting.
And what should you do? Because I think voters try their best and poll workers are trained to the best of their ability. And there can still be some circumstances where we might have the lines crossed. If you feel like you have the right information, but you can't move forward actually trying to vote, what should you do?
Yeah, thanks. So there's a couple of things that you can do. One is I would recommend that all voters, as you're getting ready for the polls tomorrow, go to myvote.wi.gov. That's the state's website where you can check your registration, you can learn about photo ID, you can find that information. So arm yourself with that information as you head to the polls. And then if you find yourself in a situation where it just doesn't seem like maybe somebody knows the right answers that, you know, is administering that process, you can always give us a call at the State Elections Commission, or you can call your local election official. Another option at your polls on election day is talk to the chief inspector. So every polling place has a chief inspector. This is the person in charge at the polls. And so if there is a question, you can engage them, and they can also help to escalate that issue if it does need to go to the state or to the clerk's office.
And we'll make sure that we do have a link up to the My Vote Wisconsin website so people can also find it at WPR.org/Central Time. Megan, if you're not registered to vote, you can still do that at the polls on Election Day in Wisconsin. What do we need to register?
When you're registering to vote at the polls on Election Day, every voter has to show a proof of residence document. Now, most voters, you're already registered to vote, so you don't have to go through this step. But if your name or your address has changed since you last voted, or if you're a new voter to the state of Wisconsin, you're going to need to get registered. And so you're going to have to bring with you that proof of residence document. And that can be something like a utility bill or a bank statement. It could be your Wisconsin driver license or ID card if it has a current address on it. Another thing about proof of residence, again, which is used when you're registering to vote, is that you can show it electronically. So let's say you get to the polls and you don't have a utility bill or a bank statement with you. You could actually look it up electronically on your phone or mobile device and show your poll worker your proof of residence document electronically.
So there are lots of options there. We also know that some people can only vote later in the evening. What happens if it's getting close to 8 o'clock and you don't know if you'll have time to get in there, especially if there are lines? What should people know about how long they're allowed to vote?
So, right, polls are open until 8 p.m. That's a deadline set by statute. But that being said, if you're in line by 8 o'clock, you're still going to be able to cast your ballot. So at 8 o'clock, each polling place is going to sort of have a marker in line if there is a line. So it's usually somebody that has a yellow vest on or something like that that's a poll worker, and they mark sort of the cutoff of 8 p.m. But as long as you're in line by 8 o'clock, you will be able to cast your ballot.
All right. Yeah, that's really important information, because if it's 7:55 and you think there's no way I'm going to get to the, you know, get into the actual site because I see people in line, the answer is, but still go, still wait, because as long as you're there, by the time it closes, you'll have an opportunity to be heard.
Exactly.
We know that clerks around the state are dealing with more absentee ballots this year than we've seen before. They're not allowed to start tabulating those until Election Day. Can you talk us through that process, why it will take extra time and labor?
Sure. So absentee ballots, so whether you voted absentee by mail or in-person absentee, those are sent to your polling place or to a central count facility to be counted on Election Day. And so unlike a voter appearing in person, they have to look at your certificate to make sure that the voter has signed their certificate. They also have to make sure that the witness has signed the certificate and that the witness has added their address. And so all of those things to make sure that the absentee ballot is sufficient have to be done at the polls on Election Day, because the law does not allow the poll workers to start opening and processing those ballots until the polls are open, because counting absentees is part of the public process of Election Day. It's all publicly observable, and it has to happen while the polls are open.
Gotcha. Do we know what the return rate is so far? We know that there are a lot of people who've requested them, but how many have actually gotten back to clerks?
Yeah, so there have been about 2.1 million absentee ballots that have been issued in the state of Wisconsin. And that's out of an expected turnout of just over 3 million, which we historically see in a presidential election in our state. And of those ballots, there are about 200,000 that have not yet been returned. Now, however, that's not a perfect number, because some of those voters might have chosen to instead utilize in-person absentee, or might choose to instead vote at the polls on Election Day. But there are some, about 91% of all absentee ballots that have been issued have been returned. But if somebody does have an absentee ballot still in hand, they should know that they can still return their ballot, but they need to do so in person. So return it to your local clerk's office, to a local drop box, or to your polling place or central count facility on Election Day.
All right. We are talking with Megan Wolf, who's the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, ahead of Election Day tomorrow. And we've got Bailey from Fox Lake, Wisconsin, who has a question. Hi, Bailey.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I just moved from Beaver Dam to Fox Lake last month, and I had emailed the DMV to change my my proof of residence. And so I had got that done, and they did it without me sending any kind of proof that I actually lived there. I just wanted to make sure that I don't, and I got my registration card in the email. I just wanted to make sure that that's still valid, or if I need to bring my my proof of residence with me again.
Bailey, thanks for that question. Go ahead, Megan. Sorry.
No, thank you so much for that question. So first step is, I'm not sure if this is just something you did at the DMV or if you've already registered to vote, but I would recommend that you start by going to myvote.wi.gov. You can look up your voter record and make sure that you're registered at your current address. And if you're not, and you need to get registered. You can't do that online anymore, but you can do it at the polls tomorrow. And then you're going to have to bring something, a proof of residence document with you to get that registration done. And so if your license is up to date and it has your new address on it, that's great. You can use that both for registering to vote and for photo ID. But if your license doesn't have your new address printed on it, then you're going to need to bring something else like utility bill and bank statement. So double check my votes. And if you're not sure if you're registered to vote at the correct address, make sure you bring a proof of residence document with you so you can register tomorrow.
All right, Bailey. Yeah, just make sure that you've got everything you might need. Thanks so much for giving us a call at 800-642-1234. If you've got a question, now is the time. We're talking about how to cast your ballot, about different options for voting safely around the state with Megan Wolf, who is Wisconsin Elections Commissioner. And we're getting the last minute reminders on voting in person tomorrow. So give us a call at 800-642-1234. We continue this conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking with Megan Wolf, who is administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, talking about what we need to know if we still need to cast our vote in this presidential election. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. You're part of this conversation. Want to make sure that you get the information that you need for your voice to be heard. That number again is 800-642-1234. 1234. Megan, I want to circle back to this idea of if I already have an absentee ballot, but I haven't returned it, what I really need to do. I mean, I still have the opportunity to vote in person, or I can still drop it off. There's always a little bit of confusion here because I kind of committed to one thing, but maybe I wasn't able to follow through. That doesn't mean I have to give up.
Right. That's a great question. So if you still have your ballot in hand, so you requested an absentee ballot be sent to you by mail, you are actually eligible to vote at the polls on election day as long as you don't return that ballot. So if you haven't returned that ballot back yet, you can either A, drop it off with your local election official. So you can go to the clerk's office either today or tomorrow, or find a drop box in your community and drop it off. Or you could not return it, and then you can vote at the polls on the election day tomorrow. Now, I need to point out, though, that if you've already returned your absentee ballot, so if you dropped it in the mail, even if you dropped it in the mail in the last few days and it hasn't made it back yet, if you've returned your absentee ballot, you are not eligible to vote or receive a ballot at the polls tomorrow on election day.
Okay, so if you got the ballot, even if you dropped it in the mail Saturday, it might not get there, but also you're not able to vote on election day in person.
That's right. The law says that if you've returned your absentee ballot, you're not eligible to receive one at the polls on election day. But if you haven't returned it, you can still vote at the polls.
But then it has to get to the commission, to the clerk's office by 8 p.m. on election day, or it doesn't count.
That's right.
Okay. And if someone has requested a ballot but didn't actually receive an absentee ballot yet, is that different?
Nope. So if you've requested an absentee ballot but you haven't yet received it, again, as long as you haven't returned that ballot, put it in the mail yet, you're still eligible to be able to vote at the polls on election day. So if you made the request but you don't yet have the ballot, then you're eligible to vote at the polls tomorrow.
Let's talk about some of the mechanics of this. We need a witness for filling out that absentee ballot. If we don't have someone at home to do that, should we bring the blank ballot to the polls and go from there? What are our options?
Another good question. So if you have that ballot still at home and you haven't returned it yet and you want to vote at the polls tomorrow because you don't have a witness or you that is what you'd prefer, then what you're going to do is you're just going to go to the polls and vote an in-person ballot at the polls. So you can't bring your absentee with you and vote your absentee at the polls. You have to cancel, destroy that absentee ballot, and then be issued an in-person ballot at the polls on election day. So you can't kind of do a hybrid approach of those two methods. But if you haven't returned that absentee yet, you can still just vote at the polls on election day. So no need to bring that ballot with you. You'll just be issued an in-person ballot at the polls on election day.
All right. And on this subject, as we're talking with Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf, we've got Jennifer in Sun Prairie with a question. Hi, Jennifer.
I actually think you may have just answered it, but my question was, if you bring your ballot, if you received a ballot and you put it in the mail and you are worried that it's not going to get there on time, can you then get it canceled and vote in person? But I believe you may have just answered that.
Yeah, Jennifer, let's double check, though. Megan, is the answer no?
The answer is no, right. If you've returned it, even if that means you put it in the mail and it hasn't been received yet, the law says if you've returned the ballot, you're not eligible to vote at the polls tomorrow.
All right. Thanks for the clarification, Megan. And Jennifer, thanks for the question. Hopefully, if that is your situation, the mail is quite speedy for you and your vote is counted. Want to go now to Lionel in Madison. Hi, Lionel.
Yeah, hi. I was just curious. I do not have COVID myself, but I do know somebody that's stuck at home with COVID now. They're not hospitalized, but they are actually stuck at home. What are their options?
Oh, good question. Thanks for that right now. And Megan, what are the options at home or in the hospital?
Yeah, so there's two options. One is a hospitalized elector, so somebody that's hospitalized in an actual care facility, or actually if you're at home and you're isolated or quarantined under doctor's orders, then you are eligible to use the hospitalized elector process. And what that means is that you're going to have an agent, someone of your choosing, actually bring your absentee ballot request and your photo ID to your clerk's office to get your ballot. They'll then bring that ballot back to the hospitalized or the quarantined voter for them to vote. And then that agent will also return their ballot to the clerk's office or to the polls or to the drop box for it to be counted. So that's one option. The second is curbside voting. So every polling place is required to have curbside voting available for voters that have disabilities or other reasons why they can't enter the polling place. And so you would also be able to utilize that option, a curbside ballot at the polling place, and they're trained to be able to deliver that process safely for both the poll worker and the voter.
All right. So again, if you haven't voted, but you are dealing with some challenges for COVID-19, don't give up. And Megan, any final thoughts as we ramp up to Election Day?
So, you know, again, I think the best place to start as you head to the polls is to go to myvote.wi.gov, find your polling place, view your sample ballot, make sure you've got the photo ID that you need to participate. You can track your absentee, and I think it's a really great place to start to make sure that you've got a plan as you head in tomorrow. But if you run into any issues, questions, trouble, please reach out to the chief inspector at your polling place, your local election official, or us at the state, and we'd be glad to help you with any of those tricky situations.
Megan, thank you for joining us in this really busy time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Quick recap, polls in Wisconsin open from 7 in the morning tomorrow until 8 o'clock tomorrow night. We are past the deadlines for voting absentee. Don't put your ballot in the mail, and also past in-person absentee. If you do still have an absentee ballot, the Wisconsin Elections Commission wants you to return it in person as soon as possible. That's directly to your municipal clerk's office or to a Dropbox location if there's one nearby. Now to COVID-19. We don't have a vaccine to prevent COVID-19. One is not expected to be widely available until next year. So anyone can get the disease, including President Donald Trump. When he came down with the disease, the president received treatment few in Wisconsin or the rest of the country have access to. Shemaine Mills reports.
The current treatment are largely experimental. Only one, the antiviral drug remdesivir, has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. A different drug, Trump hailed as a cure, is still being investigated in clinical trials. The drug maker, Regeneron, was quick to point that out after the president touted it as something it's not. Doctors also chimed in.
And I don't see it as being a cure. I do believe it's going to be a very good medicine, though.
That's Dr. William Hartman. He oversees three clinical trials for the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, including one for Regeneron's monoclonal antibody cocktail. That's what President Trump got as part of his treatment. But patients in clinical trials don't know if they're getting a placebo or the medicine. That's how researchers compare results to see if a drug works. And that's why the antibody made by Regeneron isn't widely available. Scientists still need to test it for effectiveness and safety. In mid-October, fewer than 24 Wisconsin patients had gotten the antibody under the UW clinical trial. Lane Manning was one of them. He sells real estate in the Madison area.
So this is one of my active listings. We have a couple of them. This is a great little house here in McFarland, technically Blooming Grove, which means you've got a well instead of municipal water. Water costs here.
Manning has recovered from COVID-19. He got sick while visiting his sister in Florida, where he helped her with a remodeling project.
I was a little fatigued, tired, but I thought that was because I was working on a house for 3 days, right? You know, grinding away and it was drywall. It was removing wallpaper. Like, it was stuff that would make you normally cough for a day or two. Nothing was out of the ordinary.
It wasn't an ordinary cough, but a symptom of COVID-19. After Manning tested positive, he isolated himself from the rest of the family for 2 weeks in the basement of his Fitchburg home. Still, his 13-year-old daughter became infected. She lost her sense of smell. And even though Manning's case was mild, he knows how devastating the disease can be.
But yeah, I have a total health respect for it. That's why I'm doing studies. That's why I'm doing this research.
While most treatments are still unproven, a patient who gets COVID now is likely to be better off than those who got a serious case of the illness this spring, says Dr. Hartman.
When we started in March, it really felt like we jumped out of the plane first and then decided to build the parachute. We didn't know what was going to be effective and what wasn't.
Treatments have improved, but so is testing, says Dr. Michael Landrum. He works at Bellin Health in Green Bay, one of the areas hit hardest by the pandemic.
Back in March and April, testing was constrained. And so you had to be really sick and needing hospitalization before you could get a test. So we were only detecting those patients who were sickest. And so naturally, the death rate appeared to be quite high back then.
But as the pandemic gets worse in Wisconsin, daily death counts are regularly breaking records. And without a vaccine, doctors say the best way to prevent the disease is to cover your face, wash your hands, and socially distance. For those who contract the disease, some hospitals are near capacity, but doctors have a better idea what they're facing, says Landrum.
We at least have somewhat of a playbook of how we're approaching this illness. We still have a long way to go.
A sobering reminder as many grow impatient for an end to a pandemic that shows no signs of slowing down. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina, and this is the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Rob Ferret. Fracking has become an election year issue. It came up in debates, and the Wall Street Journal reports that President Trump could require federal agencies to report on the economic impact of the industry and what would happen if it were banned. Wisconsin doesn't have fracking operations, but mining top-notch sand for the fracking industry used to be big business here until that industry started to decline. Ryan Dezember writes about energy, finance, real estate, and more for the Wall Street Journal. He co-wrote a recent piece called "There's No Oil in Wisconsin. The Fracking Bust Hit It Anyway." How does Wisconsin fit into the fracking industry? What piece do we have?
Well, you don't have any oil and you don't have any natural gas. But what you do have is a key ingredient to the sort of slurry that drilling companies use to get oil and gas out of shale. It's a sand called Northern White. It sits just below the topsoil in a big swath of western Wisconsin and, you know, into, you know, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, around there. But in Wisconsin, it's very close to the surface, very abundant. You know, drillers, when they were sort of honing the recipe for fracking, hydraulic fracturing, in which they sort of break open the shale rocks under the ground to let oil and gas out, they decided that Northern White sand in Wisconsin was the ideal sand for them. And the reason was, is it's got a very high crush strength, meaning it can take a lot of pressure before it gives away. And it's pretty round, which if you're cramming it into tiny little cracks in deeply buried geologic formations, to hold open those cracks and let oil and gas out, a round pebbly grain is ideal because you don't have a lot of surface area that can plug up the flow of the oil and gas. you know, Western Wisconsin has always mined sand. It went to, you know, into the cranberry bogs, and dairy farmers used it for bedding, and, you know, you could use it for construction or playgrounds and glass making, all these sort of things. But about a decade ago, suddenly these oil companies in Texas and North Dakota and Appalachia wanted, you know, whole train loads full, like a unit car, 100 cars full of sand, and they wanted it constantly. And that obviously led to a lot of mines opening in Wisconsin. You know, we've seen now with oil prices fall, we've seen a recalibration of the recipe that the frackers use. And what's, you know, unfortunately happened for the folks in the mining industry in Western Wisconsin is that their product is sort of out of favor. And it's not, there's not a clear path to it coming back.
So not long ago, we were talking about a fracking boom just in the last couple of years. So who actually benefited from that?
Well, I mean, the whole country really benefited. You know, it helped the balance of trade. It was a big source of jobs right when we were coming out of the financial crisis, and the recession was sort of when the shale boom took off. It's not an exaggeration to say that probably, along with some technological things like the iPhone and sort of the rebound in our housing market, were like the things that lifted the country from recession. And, you know, places like Wisconsin were able to cash in on it and sort of ride that wave because they had a product that the oil companies needed to get oil and gas out of the ground. OPEC, the cartel that had traditionally dominated the global oil markets, they got kind of tired of all the competition from the U.S., all this oil coming out. We had lifted the export ban, and we were sending, all of a sudden, crude oil from the U.S. is flooding the global market. So OPEC said, well, you know what, let's have a price war. We will turn on the taps, they will turn on the taps, and we'll see who can survive. That started in the OPEC meeting Thanksgiving in 2014, and the oil markets really haven't been the same since. There's been just a huge glut of supply. And what the U.S. companies did to counteract that was to boost production and to get more efficient. And they did that by drilling even bigger shale wells and using more and more sand. So, you know, 2015, 2016, all of a sudden you started having oil companies that were showing really promising drilling results with using, you know, 50 million pounds of sand. That's like 1,000 dump trucks full into a single well. So, you know, the miners then in Wisconsin, their share prices rose. Everyone was very excited. They started adding more, you know, more mines, more capacity, more rail cars to get it to West Texas. The problem was, is that sort of a short-lived, oil prices kept falling. And the frackers had to really look hard at their costs. And one thing they noticed was, while this sand from Wisconsin is ideal, about half of our bill for this stuff is in getting it here across the country. They looked around, increasingly drilling was concentrating in the Permian Basin in West Texas. That's a desert. They were spending a fortune to ship sand to the desert. So they said, well, you know what, why don't we use this inferior sand? It's not the best thing, but let's just use the sand that's all around where we drill. And that put added pressure on the mines in Wisconsin. And, you know, then along comes the coronavirus pandemic, fuel demand around the world plummets. That, for a lot of these mines and the mining companies, was sort of like the final nail in the coffin for them.
Ryan December has written about how the fracking industry fallout is affecting sand mines in Wisconsin. We're talking about it here on the Ideas Network. Ryan, Wisconsin has dozens of frack sand mines. How is this affecting those? Some are shut down. Lots are shut down.
Yeah, a lot of them have shut down. A few of the big companies are in bankruptcy protection, expected to emerge. It'll be, you know, it's sort of unclear how they will manage. They'll have clean books. They'll have a lot less debt. They'll have probably a lot of these like rail car leases and obligations that they took on thinking the demand would keep rising. They'll be clear of that. They can probably readjust to like a new world of less demand for their product. Some mines probably will never come back. There was just so much capacity and so much of the demand is being met by sand that the drillers can obtain much closer to where they're drilling than Wisconsin, that it doesn't look good for all of them. And of course, you know, beyond the immediate job loss of what were pretty high paying jobs in the mines, you have sort of the knock on effects. You have the folks who, you know, supplied drinking water to the plants. You have the guys that did landscaping. You have companies that did laundry or supplied equipment. And, you know, they've been left with unpaid invoices and lost some of their best customers. And of course, it trickles into the municipal finances. There's a lot of cities in that part of the state that are looking to plan their budget for 2021. And a big chunk of their revenue is in doubt. You know, they got not only property taxes and all the taxes associated with a big employer, but you had all sorts of other fees. You had like revenue agreements or royalty fees, like the, almost like a tipping fee at a landfill, like a fee per ton that was extracted from the mines paid to the cities or whatever jurisdiction they're in. All those payments are sort of in doubt now.
We've talked about frac sand mining often on the Ideas Network, and it really is a controversial thing because people do see the financial benefits that you've been talking about, but they've also talked about environmental concerns. I mean, the piece that you've co-written has these incredible images, just of huge sand mines. Describe some of those for us. Tell us what those really look like and how they strike you.
Well, I think the thing that strikes me about them is they tend to be open pit. You know, like you can go on, Google Earth. And this is what I did. My colleague was spending the summer with his family and said, hey, look, there's all these mines around and they're just being shut down. And it's a big thing out here. And, you know, you could look on Google Earth and I asked him where it was. And you can see them from darn near outer space somewhere so big because they're just like, you know, that sand is just below the topsoil. So you really just peel it back and there's just a sea of this stuff. And there's a lot of agreements where companies, if they stop mining, they have to like do reclamation projects and such. The track record for truly bringing back an area that's been mined is not good. You know, you can put a soccer field or whatever, a playground on top of something like that, but you probably can't expect it to return to the very fertile farmland that it was. You also have concerns about, you know, the chemicals that they use in the processing of this stuff, leaching into groundwater or spilling into, into waterways or neighboring properties. You have concerns about the silica dust blowing around. You can't really put that land back together. You know, there's rail spurs leading up to them, all sorts of equipment. But, you know, you can get rid of that all and cover it up, but it's not likely to go back to what it was.
What do you want us to realize about the people that you highlighted in your reporting?
There's always tension when there's like a drilling or any sort of like industrial activity. There's always folks, even real estate development, there's always folks that want things to be kind of quiet in the way they were. And there's going to be people who say, look, this is a chance for us to pay for municipal services, to offer jobs for our young people to stay here and not have to leave to seek an employment, beyond sort of the farming or whatever other sort of jobs there are around. You know, some people really celebrated that the mines went broke. It was like, you know, we talked to people and their kitchens had been just shaking if they lived nearby some of these things. Like, you imagine your dishes rattling day and night for years during the shale boom. So that stopped, and these folks are very happy. And they hadn't been able to stop them much in court or in town council meetings or whatever it was. So there was a bit of glee for some, but it's been so economically damaging for some. We talked to a man whose best customer was Hi-Crush, a big miner there. They've gone bankrupt. And, you know, he had a lawn mowing and snow removal business, and they were his biggest customers. So not only did he lose about 3/4 of his revenue from his best customer basically disappearing, they also left him with a whole summer's worth of unpaid bills. So, you know, this poor guy worked like for a few months and hasn't gotten paid. And, you know, for him, that's like a big chunk of his annual income. So, you know, what happens to him and what are the trickle effects? And that's just one person at one, you know, with one company, and, you know, amplify that times hundreds and maybe even a few thousand in a place that doesn't have a lot of people. So it's a pretty devastating economic development for that area.
Yeah. Ryan, thank you for taking the time to talk with us about what's happening here in Wisconsin.
And thank you for having me.
That was finance writer Ryan December sharing how the fracking industry bust is affecting Wisconsin. To read the full article December wrote with Alexander Osipovich and see the incredible pictures of those frac sand operations, visit WPR.org/Central Time. Runners pride themselves on keeping pace, but our next guest says it might be time to slow down. Emily Abadi is a certified fitness trainer and host of the podcast Hurdle. She's also a writer. Her recent piece for Runner's World is called In Defense of Walking More and Running Less, Just Hear Me Out. I spoke with her recently. You're a runner making the case for walking. What is it about running first that draws you in?
So I think that the thing I love the most about running is that it's equal opportunist. And it doesn't matter how fast you're going or how quote unquote slow you're going. All that matters on the run is that you're out there trying to give it what you have at that very moment. For me, someone who took a long time to develop their relationship with running, I appreciate it now more than ever, especially during this hell of a year that is 2020.
Yeah, well, and you know, you say it doesn't quite matter how fast you go, and yet when you had to start walking, you write that you felt like a slug.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a little bit of background on my personal journey when it comes to lacing up. I really began starting lacing up back in 2008 while I was on a journey to lose weight. That weight lost about 70 pounds over the course of 3 to 4 years back in college. I went through that in about two phases. The first, learning how to eat better. And the second, again, learning how to love running. And when I started running, I did it every day. And I ran for a half mile. And that half mile somehow took me almost 15 minutes. Now, fast forward, I'll give you a little, a short story long here, is that I've now become a certified run coach. I'm also an 8-time marathoner with a personal best time of 3 hours, 28 minutes, and 8 seconds. So I've come a long way since those 14 minute half miles. And so as you can imagine, being a runner that loves running, being a runner that runs quite often, having to slow back down dramatically as a result of injury, especially during a year that there has been so much unpredictable, was certainly difficult for me, both mentally and physically.
You mentioned that you got hurt and you were trying to listen to your body, but you couldn't just sit, right? You had to keep moving. And that's what brought you to walking. Walking can actually help a person who enjoys running, right?
Of course, of course. You know, I think that for me personally, getting up and moving my body, it's such an integral way to start the day. It's so integral to my mental health as well as my physical well-being, getting in those steps. And so for me, I mean, and for runners everywhere, really, running can be such a great practice, but walking can be equally as valuable for so many aspects. I mean, of course, getting in those steps, moving your body can help you think more clearly. It can certainly give you some of those same endorphins that are so important when it comes to our mood. And for me, getting outside of, you know, the walls of my home and getting that fresh air and starting the morning with a practice that allowed me to set some positive goals and good intentions for the rest of the day, I found that to be really, really critical, especially back in March, April, at that beginning part of the year.
What can you say to someone who is moving less than usual now with the pandemic and maybe working from home or certainly trying to stay home more?
I think that there are certainly ways that we can incorporate little pieces of movement into our day-to-day. You don't have to get up and go for an hour-long walk or an hour-long run or do anything really for that long amount of time. Instead, there are ways to integrate smaller periods of movement into our regular routine. So say you're sitting at your computer for the fourth hour of your work from home day and you're feeling a little stagnant, a little frustrated, there is a great opportunity right in that time to get up and go for a 10, 15 minute walk. Maybe you want to add in some other movement throughout your day, whether that's a set of 10 squats every time you get up to refill your cup of water that you're drinking from, or something like a core challenge every day after you eat lunch before sitting back down at the computer. There are endless ways to integrate little doses of movement into your routine that can give back to your body and honestly boost your mood as well.
Emily Abadi is a fitness writer and podcast host. She's also a certified fitness trainer, and we're talking about her piece on walking more and running less. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Emily, what about those little steps toward more movement? Is 15 minutes walking the dog doing much of anything for our health, or do we really need it in the 45 to an hour range like is suggested with cardio?
Right. So, I mean, something is better than nothing, right? And I think that's what's really important to focus on is that so often, especially in the age of social media, we are comparing ourselves to others. And that is easy to do. It's okay. It happens. But what's important is that instead of shoulding on yourself, so to speak, I should be walking or running for 45 minutes. I should be trying some sort of high intensity interval training. Instead of shoulding on yourself, comparing yourself to others, do what feels right for you. So is that 15 minute walking the dog doing something? Of course it's doing something. Of course it's good for you. Of course, however, you do need to integrate some more regular movement into your routine beyond just walking the dog. It's super important that you're moving your body regularly. I believe the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they recommend about 150 minutes of physical activity each week. But again, that doesn't need to happen in long chunks. That can happen in small doses every single day.
When you've been walking more instead of running, you've noticed that it's different than other walking that you do just to live normal life. How?
Yeah, so this is exactly what I wrote about in my piece for Runner's World. Really, that morning walk, going back to this idea of setting intention for my day, of taking back time for myself, especially living in a crazy city like New York. When I get up and out early, it's my opportunity to give back to me, to show up for myself so that I can better show up for other people. And also really dedicating this time to the walk, maybe listening to podcasts or an enjoyable playlist. This allows me to enjoy that for what it is. Enjoy that for just this regular dose of movement where nothing else is really important. All that is important for me in this time period is to enjoy myself, to focus on me, and just take a deep breath in the midst of all of this chaos.
What have you noticed on these walks that you might have otherwise missed?
I think what's really special for me is being able to really look around my surroundings. I mean, living in New York, I am just like so many of the rest of us here. We're constantly on the move, and large in part because of the pandemic, many of us have had to slow down, take a step back. And in the mornings, to be able to not just walk forward, but remind myself to look up, look around, take stock of what is happening around me, and really root this practice, this walk, in gratitude for all of the things that I have, instead of what can be a little dangerous of a situation of worrying too much about the things that I am without. So this walk, this morning routine, really allowing me to take stock and be grateful for what it is that I do have in my life.
Yeah, there's a relatively obvious metaphor here that the world is moving at this crazed pace and walking is this deliberate slowdown.
Of course, for sure.
When you aren't dealing with injuries, when your body is in a place where it's fully healed, are you going to keep walking?
So thankfully, I'm on the mend now. I'm feeling much better. And just as I have ramped up my mileage and my running in preparation for that event, walking is still an integral part of my routine. In fact, even if I am going for that morning run some days, if I get in early enough, my favorite thing to do is to make that coffee in the morning and take that with me on a walk, just like I was when I couldn't run at all. And again, it's just that mindful moment for me. It's that time for me to give back to myself, to catch up on my podcast and just be before the asks and the demands start to pour in as the day goes on.
Emily, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Of course. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
That was trainer and writer Emily Abadi. You can read her article at WPR.org/Central Time. And tomorrow on Central Time, we're talking about the books we're reading and loving in this pandemic. We've also got some television suggestions for you, and we'll tell you how to avoid winter dread because winter is coming. That's tomorrow.